Welcome to ATS Mix.
And I think until you start asking questions, you know, you're just going to buy whatever's offered to you on the 6 o'clock news.
ATS Mix.
This isn't a talk show, it's a freak show.
From AboveTopSecret.com.
But also be skeptical of the people who are out there selling conspiracy theories.
The Internet's most popular conspiracy theory discussion board. ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com.
In the name of Christ, just let us in!
Starts now.
And welcome to the ATS Mix. I am Johnny Anonymous.
And I am Mulder. Fox Mulder.
Is that your code name?
You would be my Dana Scully, right?
Yeah, except I don't look good in a dress.
Well, I've heard different stories around the...
They're not true.
Okay. Maybe hey, from the cosmic guys.
Yes. So. Hey, you know something? You remember last week in our last episode, we had up on the soapbox the MUFON director from California, Ruben Uriarte?
I love that guy.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Well, guess what we were able to do?
What's that?
Through the magic of technology... Wait a minute, here it comes... That's
like
our
turkey.
Yes,
like
thank you very much. All the way from down the street to somewhere in the Bay Area, it's MUFON's director, Ruben Uriarte. Hi, Ruben. How are you doing?
How are you doing there, Johnny? And how are you doing, Dave?
I'm doing all right for a kid. Boy, what a pleasure, Ruben, because Johnny has told me so much about you and about y'all's friendship and your common interests. So, boy, what a real honor it is to talk to you firsthand, Ruben.
Well, thank you very much. Feelings mutual there for both of you guys.
Well, now, we had a number of members, U2U, which is a private message at AboveTopSecret.com. They U2U'd me and wanted to ask if they could get more information about this MUFON symposium that is going to be happening starting, actually, I guess the official date is July 25th, but on July 24th, there is a special day that has been added. So we thought, well, you know what? Let's just go right to the source and bring Ruben on. So tell us about what's going on this next following weekend.
Well, thank you, Johnny. There's it's coming up very shortly, and we're just really very happy with the responses that we've been receiving from a number of people. We've got a great lineup of speakers, not your typical speakers that go on the lecture circuit per se, but we've got some very interesting people that have been out there and doing research in their own particular areas of expertise. What we're going to be doing is kicking off on July 24th, we're going to have a number of workshops that are related to field investigations. One of the people that will be there was Mr. Bud Hopkins, who's going to be doing an abduction training for our researchers. And this is also open up to the public, by the way. We'll be having more focus on dealing with the media, and that's by Leslie Keene, Physical Evidence Collection and Scientific Data by Brad Sparks. One of the things that is very challenging, as you know, Johnny and Dave, is the whole thing about photo analysis. And so,
right. As
you know, technology that's out there, it's always very, very challenging when people present photos. Is it real or not real? So we have an expert in that area. His name is Mark D'Antonio. That's going to be talking about photo and video analysis. When we go out there on the field, one of the big concerns is doing radiation site surveying. So we have an expert in that area, Chuck Maudlin, who used to work with the Lawrence Livermore. Yes, so he's going to be there. So we've got some really good experts. And then, of course, we have our Fridays event, and it's more of the business-type events. We have a state director's meeting. We have our MUFON board meeting. We have a press conference. Now, the press conference, that's going
to... Yeah. You know what? In fact, I'm glad you got to this, because that was going to be my next question. You definitely got a press conference coming up, because everybody's going to want to hear about this.
Yes. One of the big items that we're going to be talking about is the whole Stevensville case. There's a 77-page report that was put together by two gentlemen, Glenn Schultz and Robert Powell. They put together a 77-page report, very technical report, titled A Comprehensive Radar and Witness Report Study. And this is going to be released to the public. In fact, our listeners can have access to this report by going to www.mufon.com, and you can actually print the report. And it gives a lot of technical data, but the bottom line is that there was a number of unusual objects that were detected and picked up by radar that wasn't military, that wasn't civilian aircraft, and it matched very closely with all the witness sightings. I mean, there's a correlation of the witness sightings and the radar data. Going to be really quite significant when this is released. So again, this is a very, very comprehensive study that's going to be released to the general media. And again, your viewers or your listeners can have access to this report by just going to our website.
All they need to do is make sure that they go down to Home Depot and buy a ream of paper.
Exactly.
How many pages? 77 pages, you said?
Yeah. You know, what's really interesting, too, Johnny and Dave, is that we're going to have... you remember the Chicago hair sighting?
Oh, sure.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Well, I work with NARCAP, National Aviation Reporting Center for Anomalous Phenomena, and we had put together close to a 60, 70-page document that really wasn't... You know, it really went into the whole anomalous information that was gathered by the air traffic controllers, by the United Airlines personnel. And we have basically... one of our speakers, who's an aerospace engineer, actually has done the research of the saucer or the object that actually punched the hole in the cloud.
Wow.
And he's going to be presenting this technical data. So that's going to be also available at the conference, not the report as well as his presentation. So here you have two significant events, and you've got a lot of research and a lot of technical data that I think the general public is going to be quite impressed.
Can I ask one question? And if you guys have, either one of you said this, then I must have missed it. Where is this thing going to take place?
It's going to be at the DoubleTree Hotel.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's the most important item.
Yeah, DoubleTree Hotel in where?
In San Jose. It's 2050 Gateway Place in San Jose, California.
And the public is invited, right?
Right.
Yes, by all means. It's not just to our members, but it's definitely open to the public. We want to pack that place. You know, one of the things we're trying to do, Dave and Johnny, is we're trying to also attract a lot of the youth. We want to get the high school students. We want to get the college students. So we've been doing a little extra focusing on that because we need new blood, obviously,
through
new investigators. So. We're
so
focusing
if they mentioned
on that
they're there for the MUFON thing, will they get a special hotel discount, Ruben? Do you know?
Oh, you know, we're toying with that idea. Unfortunately, we haven't had a chance to really promote that. But what we are going to do is set aside a special room where we're going to have our board of directors meet with the young audience and get their advice. I would love to see MUFON clubs opening up at the local high school. So this is something we want to do.
Wow, that would
promote
so
the awareness.
Neat.
And
yeah,
if you show up and say, hey, I'm from AboveTopSecret.com and I heard Ruben on Dave and Johnny's show, they won't sit you in the back of the seats.
I know. They get preferential treatment. How's that?
There you go.
It's not who you know, it's what you know, right?
That's right. Well, listen, I know that we've got ourselves about 4 minutes left here, and I wanted to just kind of briefly jump around here. You yourself, you are an author besides being the director for California MUFON, and also you've got some interests that are deep STEM that you've been doing for a long time. One of those is crop circles, and then you authored a book about a Mexican Roswell, if I recall correctly. Is that not correct?
Well, that's correct there, Johnny. We've got two books now. It's called Mexico's Roswell, the Chihuahua UFO Crash, that I co-authored with Mr. Noe Torres about an object that collided with an airplane over the state of Chihuahua back in 1974. And the History Channel did a whole special on that particular event. And then we came up with another, our research has been continuing. We keep finding up about other crash retrievals. This one here called the Other Roswell UFO Crash on the Texas-Mexico border. The living testimony of a F-86 fighter pilot. He's still alive. He's now retired as a colonel in the Air Force. And this man shared with us about how this object flew right over their squadron when they were flying escort for a group of B-47 bombers, and he actually saw the object crash on the other side of the Rio Grande River. He went back and he actually retrieved some of the wreckage.
Wow.
So it's a fascinating, it's all factual, and we want to promote our book, but also, I mean, there's another story there.
Well, was there debris and aliens found in all this?
Oh, no bodies per se, because he had to leave. The whole wreckage was surrounded by Mexican soldiers.
Oh,
so they got there quick. They got there quickly, and we know that there's a collaboration between both governments when it comes to retrievals.
Well, what about something like trace evidence? Was there anything left on the ground?
Well, that's where our research needs to continue. Our plans are to go back to the wreckage site. We're similar to what we did in Chihuahua, where we actually found wreckage of an airplane. We actually got pieces of it, and we're doing analysis with the molten aluminum that we found to see if there's any evidence of where this plane may have collided with another object.
Well, I know you're interested in crop circles. Has there been any crop circle sighting that was unusual to you?
Well, you know, we're right in the middle of the season again, and especially in the UK. And the other formations that have been appearing around the world, in Korea, I was really, really surprised about the one. There was one in Spain that just recently came out. I'm starting to get information about that this particular formation may be a commercial for Barkerdy.
Oh, really?
Yes. And then there was some other formations appearing in Canada, some recent in the Midwest and Ohio. I'm really fascinated, by the way, with crop circles in the United States. There's something they're increasing in numbers. I think that's something we're going to need to continue to put a lot of focus on there.
Well, sure.
And it's not just what a lot of people try to kind of do a disinformation thing. Guys with 2x4s planking the stuff down, either. I mean, there's a few of those, but I mean, there's a lot of them that are just totally unexplained, right?
Exactly, and it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of dedication, and there's a number of people out there that have been really doing their best and getting that information to the general public and getting that information to radio programs such as yours.
It's sure.
To get the truth out there.
We've got about 30 seconds left with you, Ruben, and if you can answer this question in 30 seconds, you're my hero. Why are they making these crop circles?
In 30 seconds or less.
Oh, God. I'm going to have to be really honest with you. I mean, I could just speculate as to why. I don't really have the answer, but I think as we start putting this whole puzzle together, I really think it's just another way of them telling us, hey, guys, you guys got to take better care of your planet. You got to take better care of the situations that you have here, because you have a beautiful planet here. We've got to know how to take care of what we have, our resources, and not go into warfare and all the other things like that. You go into a lot of self-reflection, because we're not the only ones in our universe.
Well, once again, before we let you go, tell everybody once again where they can go to attend the MUFON Symposium in San Jose.
Yes, it's going to be Thursday, July 24th through Sunday, July 27th at the DoubleTree Hotel, 2050 Gateway Place in San Jose. Go on to our MUFON website, www.mufon.com, and there'll be a lot more information. We have a great lineup of speakers, international speakers from all various countries, and we are looking forward to seeing you there.
Okay, great, Ruben. We appreciate that. And speaking of a great lineup, we've got a great lineup on our show, and that's going to include our UFO sightings from Canada, Dave, just Canada. We let our U.S. reporter take a vacation for a week.
And then, of course, we've got the Skeptic Overlord Unleashed again, John.
Then we're going to wrap it up with a interview with X-Files co-producer and writer Frank Spotnitz. And it's going to be a wild ride.
This is ATS Mix.
What? Whoa, what am I hearing?
What is this?
From above topsecret.com.
Ah, crap!
Here are your anomalous sightings
from around the world.
This is Tamaril from Godbox Cafe with sightings from across Canada. We celebrated Canada Day on July 1st, and the skies were lit up with fireworks all over the country. However, 10 witnesses in Bolton, Ontario, just north of Toronto, spotted a bright orange fireball of light far too large to be a renegade explosive from someone's celebration. Traveling northward, it quickly dropped altitude and disappeared. The same individual submitting this report to HBCC UFO Research recalled a time 10 years ago when three people witnessed a ring of red lights hovering over the Humber River for 5 minutes before dropping in the same way out of view. Meanwhile, long after the fireworks were over, in Kitsilano, B.C., at 3:45 a.m., six witnesses were observing the skies when another large fireball appeared in the southwest sky heading northeast. At first, it was assumed this was either a meteor or a comet, but when the flames dispersed, what looked like solid white vertical beacon lights were revealed. A plane heading towards the fireball was seen turning away from the plummeting object. One of the witnesses called 911 in the event that it was a plane crashing. A call back from emergency said there was a crash into Burnaby Mountain, but no following media coverage supported this after the fact. Oddly enough, at the same time, in the early morning in Tribune Bay, BC, six other witnesses were lying on the beach when a large explosion in the southwest sky was visible. It was reported that a meteor-like object flew east, emitting a vapor trail, which tapered off as the object appeared to break apart into two separate lights, one slightly above the other. There seemed to be a tube between them, but it wasn't clearly discernible. The object faded off into the eastern sky, dropping altitude as it proceeded, and afterwards lights in the distance were visible. This is Tamriel from Godbox Cafe, keeping my eyes to the skies for AboveTopSecret.com.
And now it's time for a different view. This is the Skeptic Overview.
Hi, everybody. This is Dave Rabbit, live from Corpus Christi, Texas, along with my partner out in the California land somewhere, the Johninator and Johnny Anonymous. And we have on the line, finally, after several attempts, our boss, A, number one, the number one, Amigo, the top dog, the big cat, Bill, Skeptic Overlord Irvin. Hi, Bill. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you guys doing?
Not bad. Thanks for bearing with us as we tried to attempt 19 different times to connect with you. So,
yeah, Mr. Anonymous is over there.
You're having the computer problems, right?
Well, yeah, Mr. Anonymous has been over there flipping dials and plugging cables and frantically trying to get everybody all reconnected and everything. It's just been, yeah, the past half hour we've been struggling with bad internet and bad dial-up and just badness. So I think... clearly, the powers that be are trying to suppress what we're going to say here.
Bad internet.
Yeah. You're not blaming the Johninator, are you? You're blaming the internet, right?
Absolutely. Not necessarily the internet, but the powers that be that control the internet and are aware of what it is we're doing here.
Well, they've got more of a clue than we do.
Yeah, really. Right? Well, you guys have more of an idea what's going on the site because I'm out of pocket, and have been for a few days, so... I did log on and saw that there's really some really wild and crazy threads that are on the top and the hot. So have you had a chance to peruse them today, Bill?
Well, I typically try to get caught up like 2 hours before the show and get caught up on the threads that we want to talk about. But my internet has been down for most of the evening. Wonderful Time Warner cable. And so I haven't been able to do that. But what I'm going to do is cover two topics, one mainly from memory and the other one almost the same thing. So we're going to cover them really poorly.
Okay.
But one is really interesting and is getting a very stunning response from our members. And the other is also interesting and getting a similarly strange response as well. So we'll jump into those as soon as you guys are ready.
Oh, we're ready.
We're ready.
We're ready. Rock and roll.
Oh, really? Just go right into it? Wow. This is amazing.
Well, hell yeah. We've already started the show. What are you waiting for? Applause?
Well, yes, please. Can we do the applause? All right. Wonderful. That's great.
Hey, 2 out of 3 applause ain't bad.
So this one, and Dave, I know you haven't had a chance to see this, and hopefully Johnny has, was begun by our moderator, Nefermore, and she started this. Is that one of our female mods? I forget. Anyway.
Is the mod actually a she?
Yes. Yes. I had a brief moment of panic going, wait a minute, did you screw it up?
She's a she.
Yes. Yes, but my doubt is what actually really did screw it up. So there you go.
No, you're fine.
She started a thread today. What day did she start this thread? I'm sorry, I'm looking at the date wrong. This thread was begun just a couple days ago. Oh, man, let me get my calendar out here. Oh, actually, yeah, it is today.
By the way, for those that are listening, today, when we're recording this, that would be a Monday.
Monday the 14th. All right. And the title of the thread is, Everyone is Tired and No One Knows Why.
Ah, yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. Hello. This is, you know, she started this just sort of on the whim, beginning unusual one this, but definitely a current event of the other variety. I'll qualify my position by saying I'm not sure if this is a local thing to me or something more widespread, but fascinatingly, it could tie into this thread, and what she does is link to a thread. Something has changed, timeline, started last week by Gray 580, another interesting thread, more on a metaphysical level. Everyone, and I do mean everyone, I came across, she continues, at the present time, from friends and associates through to work colleagues and even people whose conversations I hear in the street, all seem to be saying the same thing, that they are tired and run down and have no idea what they've done to cause it. So firstly, is anyone else experiencing this in other parts of the world? And if so, what do you think it's down to? Atmospheric effects, weather conditions, missing time, and being out of synchronization, as alluded to in the thread? Some kind of virus, global consciousness, or something even more sinister? And the thread has taken on a fast life of its own into 13 pages.
Wow.
Golly.
It's beginning this morning, 45 flags. And generally, easily, 80% of the people responding are in agreement that, yeah, you're right. I have been saying for the past week or so that I'm tired and run down and don't have the energy I normally have. And these responses are from all over the world, not just the United States or not just one region.
Right.
Pretty much, you know, Asala, one of our super moderators, echoed a similar type of response that is in, you know, easily more than half of the responses from other members. Funny you should say that, but I know that here in London, we are all saying the same thing. Everyone I bump into is saying that they're really tired lately and they don't know why.
Hmm.
And this is a very, very interesting thread to read. In some cases, some very long and very detailed descriptive replies from members about what they're experiencing along these lines all over the world.
Hmm.
Well, No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, just as a callback, perhaps both of you remember that at the beginning of last week's Skeptic Overview segment, I mentioned how tired I felt.
Yes.
Hmm. Wow. Now that's weird.
And I normally every day go out for a bike ride. Hopefully, I try to get in about 20 miles to get some exercise. And for at least the past week, it's been hard. It's like I haven't had the initiative or I don't want to quite say the energy, but more the desire to go for a hard ride and get an exercise. I still go out, but it's like the desire to work at it and get a good workout just isn't there. And that's been at least more than a week that I felt that way.
Hmm.
Well, you know. And of course, this could be completely out in left field, but you know, what I think a lot of it is attributable to is look at all the crap that's gone on the last 2 weeks in the world.
News fatigue.
If that doesn't make you depressed, not want to get out of bed or do anything, I don't know what it is. I mean, you got financial institutions that are dropping like flies. I saw a post when I was able to log on in dial-up hell that someone posted Wachovia, the bank Wachovia, in that in the last 4 years, their stock has dropped down from $40 or $50 a share to less than $10 a share just recently. And then, what is it, Sunny Mac, Big Mac, what the hell is the one that went?
IndyMac. IndyMac.
And there was a second one. Who was that?
That's the only one so far.
But no, there was two. I saw it. There was two of them that kind of went belly up and... And if I'm not mistaken, Bush is trying to get Congress to approve this bailout thing, or the Secretary of the Treasury, one of those numb nuts up there is trying to do it. But, I mean, don't you guys think that, you know, maybe a lot of it is attributable to the things that are going on, you know, right now? I mean, Iran's sitting there saying, you know, doing these fake nuke strikes or whatever the hell they're doing. And people are seeing all this stuff, and they're going, man, you know, I mean... It looks like doom and gloom, you know.
Well, you know what it reminds me of, and I'm sure you guys will immediately, or hopefully you'll immediately say, yeah, you're right. It reminds me of the last 2 years of the Carter administration. Remember how depressed the country was back then?
Oh, yeah. Right.
You're right.
And everyone was just like, oh, crap, not another piece of bad news. Oh, geez, not more. I can't take anymore. Oh, no, body blow, uppercut, you know, left and right in the news. It was It was terrible. And
I don't know, it's just an observation that you know, maybe the reason why we're all kind of feeling that same response is because, you know, we're on sensory overload from bad news
but it seems as though the United States is the epicenter of the worst of the news. It doesn't explain why people in some areas of the world that aren't doing as nearly as bad as we are feeling the same degree of the same kind of fatigue.
But they see the same news. They see the same doom and gloom. Don't you think they're affected?
They don't have our media.
What's happening in the world?
The media in Europe isn't as focused on feeding us bad news as the American media is here.
Well, that's a shame. That sucks.
Yeah, right?
In any of these 13 pages, Bill, was anything brought up about the magnetic poles?
Not about the magnetic poles, but more about the there were actually a couple of very good posts. This is where I thought you were going with that, about the electromagnetic waves.
Yeah, well, that's kind of where I was heading with that, yeah.
Yeah, saturating our space for so long, and that the feeling is that it's just building up over time and causing a buildup of fatigue in our heads. And there's actually a few links to some scientific studies. I was desperately trying to find one just a moment ago, and I don't remember where it is in the thread now because it's grown so fast. Because I just recently got my internet connection back. But there are a couple links to some studies that people who claim to have a Wi-Fi sensitivity feel in a more intense way, feel the same kind of fatigue that's being described by some of the members. A general malaise is being what's being described, but the people with Wi-Fi sensitivity, one of the acute symptoms that they claim to have, and you know, some doctors think that it's all in their heads, but one of the acute symptoms they claim to have is just a really intense feeling of fatigue.
Right.
And well, you know, what you said about the poles.
Well, I was going to allude more to a magnetic field, but I was just querying him if anybody had mentioned anything about the magnetic poles. But the reason why I was going to go there is because in the past 10 years, technologically, globally, we have experienced a huge multitude, a rush towards electronic gizmos that put out more magnetic fields, more of a radio frequency bombarding the world constantly. And as probably is brought out in this thread, when you are constantly surrounded by magnetic fields, they have been able to prove that people that even live close to high electrical tower and wires that go across your city, that those people have a tendency to be overly fatigued, and there's also an increase in cancer among those people that live underneath those high electric wires and lines. So it just seems to me that the more magnetic fields we have building up globally, it's got to be having some effect on us.
Right.
On top of that, hasn't there been some evidence that our poles have shifted slightly and weakened significantly over the past decade?
Yes, indeed. In fact, you know, at one time, you know, being a geologist and a gold miner, I know that anytime I'm searching for gold, I'm looking for old alluvial remains and remnants of past rivers, which instead of traveling east to west, traveled north to south. So that means that at one time, our magnetic poles were differently and were shift than they are currently. And there has been a lot of conjecture and quite a few scientists also that have been trying to write up theories as that approximately, I guess, every, who knows, 50,000 years, 100,000 years, who really knows, that there is a shift of where the magnetic poles start to tweak. And when that happens, you have birds and animals that don't seem to know where they're going, and we're kind of experiencing that now. We are seeing that migrations of animals seems to be off and has been off for the past couple of years. So I think we're right now, we're not even close to the epicenter part of this. I think we're just, you know, we're at the bottom of the roller coaster as it's starting to chug uphill.
So talk about bad news. That's like the great mother of bad news.
Yeah.
Wow.
Of course, that's all conjecture, you know. I mean,
sure, certainly.
Well, yes. I mean, you know, I'm sure the members have really researched this and really done done their job as always, because we have the smartest members on the planet. But still, I think, you know, we can throw out a thousand different suggestions or philosophies or whatever, and you know, maybe it's a combination of all, maybe it's a combination of none, you know. But I think that's interesting that it has that many responses. That means everybody's really experiencing it worldwide.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. There is a. I mean, there are some members that are thinking it's all in our head, and also mentioning what we've talked about here is just the buildup of bad news, just causing a general, news fatigue, if you will. But then again, there's some people that have responded that claim to be unaffected or not even paying attention to the news, and still feeling this general fatigue. Maybe it is a shared consciousness. That we're unaware of, that everyone is just, you know, in a doom and gloom mood, and everyone's picking up on it.
Right.
Oh.
So yeah. What's your second one?
Phone's ringing, dude. Well, the second one began last week, and it's not really a particular thread, but it's a buildup of drama on the site, if you will. And it began
more
with
drama.
Yeah, really? Can you imagine drama on ATS?
I can't imagine that. No.
It began, maybe as soon as I mention this, you'll groan and say, "Oh no!" But it began with the thread about the unfortunate death to cancer of Tony Snow, mm-hmm. And several members expressed their regret to see Mr. Snow pass on, and you know, agree or disagree with the guy, you got to feel for his family and feel for the fact that, you know, he's no longer with us. And there were quite a few members that essentially hated the man's guts because of what he stood for and expressed it in the thread right. about his death,
right.
Which in turn resulted in a lot of back and forth attacks between members and resulted in the need for us to remove some posts that were heated insults hurled at other members and then actually close the thread down because it just got out of hand.
Right.
Then another member posted, "Well, what are you clamping down on our free speech because we just can't say hurtful things about someone who died?" And then it got bad again from there. So I started a thread which got bad again. But anyway,
but I'm sure your intentions were very good.
Yes, the intent was, and this is something we can lob out there for discussion, is that the idea of freedom of speech and free expression is not a license behind which you can say whatever the hell you want. It's a responsibility to talk about things that matter and challenge people to rethink the way they think. And it seems as though far too many people online, not just ATS, but all across the internet, you know, sort of improperly or illegitimately or even irrationally stand behind freedom of speech as right. their right to spew all kinds of vulgarities or talk about illegal drug use for people of all ages to see and not really think about the responsibility that they have to, you know, that is inherent in the idea of freedom of speech. What do you guys think?
Do you want to go first, Dave, or you want me to?
No, go ahead, John.
All right. Well, I think, you know, we are and this here again, the views expressed here are solely those of Johnny Anonymous. I think because we are a public forum, I think a lot of people have to check their digital ego at the door and keep in mind that we have people of all ages, all genres, all sexes, all religions, and everybody needs to try to address one another as if they were to meet them on the street. Would you immediately try to start throwing your fist at somebody you just met, a stranger? Granted, there are probably a few people that would. But I have always been in the likes of treat one the way you want to be treated. So if you're going to start spewing off, you know, bad stuff towards other people, you can expect that karma to come right back towards you. So I've always been against those kind of people, and I've kind of strayed away from people. And even though I can try to be as diplomatic as I can, if I see it's going nowhere, I will not post anymore on that thread, simply because I don't want any drama or get riled up into it. I'm finished.
Well, there was a thread that was kind of a topper for a while. It had to do with I forgot the member's name, but it basically had something to do with about, I can't believe these people aren't supporting the American soldier, whatever. And normally, anything that I see on the site that has to do with American soldiers or whatever, I'll click on the thing just to see what's going on and where the thread's heading. And, there was a kind of a mixed thing. Of course, a lot of people get on the anti-Bush stance, which, I totally understand their reasoning for that. They're preaching to the choir with that one. But, the whole purpose of the thread was that he couldn't believe that people, Americans, were not being supportive of the American soldier. And you guys know, I absolutely, it's like dragging me into a thread. You've got to literally drag me in because I don't really particularly care to dive into the foray and, of what our membership is capable of doing, when you express certain opinions. But I decided, what the hell? I decided that I was going to go ahead and post, and so I did. I stated my opinion, whatever. And, of course, a lot of people started, and a few people, thumbs up and whatever and yada, yada, yada because of my prior experience with the military. And then, of course, there was a couple people. And what I find amazing is anytime there's a thread about the American soldier or whatever, there's always going to be this group of people that sits there and takes the approach, well, these guys are killing civilians, these guys are killing kiddos, these guys are doing this and doing that. And, you can say that about every single war that there's ever been and every single country that's ever participated in every single war. And, after I got into the thing, I said, oh, man, I wish I hadn't done this because, you can't win in those threads, whether it's this one or the one that you're talking about, Bill. You can't. There's no winning there. And the thing that aggravates me most about our beloved home is that instead of just saying, hey, I respect you, and this is what I told the clown that sat there and said something about me. He said, I said, look. I don't care if you agree with me or don't agree with me. I'm just giving you my opinion, and that's all it is. It's my opinion, Just like I respect his opinion, he can respect my opinion and still not disagree, still not agree with me. And I wish we could kind of get more to that point. And I just don't think it's ever going to happen because people are too passionate about the subjects that are on AboveTopSecret.com. Just my thoughts.
There's a classic and recently penned cartoon that I posted into the moderators only thread that was discussing this particular topic, and it's a it's an image of someone sitting at their computer, and an off frame voice is saying, "Honey, are you coming to bed?" And the guy at the computer answers, "No, I can't. This is important. I can't right now. This is important." And she says, "Why?" And he responds, and he's typing furiously on his keyboard, "Someone is wrong on the internet."
That's good. I like that.
Yes, that's great.
That sums it up, doesn't it? Or you just
it really does. And to the membership of AboveTopSecret.com and our guests and our valued people that come there and make us what we are. I'm not bitching about that you have an opinion. I'm really not. What I bitch about is that, as Bill has said, there's all kinds of different age groups, all different ethnic origins and whatever, and religions, someone will come in and say, hey, yada, yada, yada. And then, it's a pile-on. The pile-ons drive me nuts. I hate the pile-ons, I'd rather somebody say, well, Jimmy, maybe you should do a little bit more research, and here's the reason why. And you post a couple of shortcuts to threads that point to Jimmy, so he knows he can learn something. But I guess it's just our environment that we have. Don't you think, Bill, to a degree?
Well, it's the internet in general, and another issue that I pointed out, which is sort of a legendary thought in the whole history of the internet, right, is this notion of the eternal September, or the September that never ended, depending on who you talk to about. And what this refers to is back how the Usenet used to be in the early 90s.
You're talking about early BBS days, aren't you?
Yes, I am. The Usenet, before there was the internet, before there was the web, I should say.
Right.
In 1993, it was mostly just all the people at the colleges talking amongst themselves.
Right.
And then on September of 1993, AOL opened up the Usenet so that all the AOL members could access it and just start posting like idiots. And so that was the legendary moment where these people call it the September that never ended because people just started spewing. And
bye,
that notion.
Bye, Miss American Pie. Hey.
Bye. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Sorry.
And that's the thing, that until people start realizing what they're doing and taking responsibility for what they're posting on the internet, you know, we're still in September. And that's the idea behind
September. A lot of it. I mean, I went through the same thing. You know, when I became a member of AboveTopSecret.com, you know, I mean, I got on the site and I went, wow. I was totally blown away and overwhelmed by the intelligence level that I felt that the membership had was producing, you know, on all the threads and stuff. And I mean, you know, I think that's a lot of what we are, is we're all so dedicated to finding the truth and getting the things that maybe no one else wants to dig deep enough for. And it's because of that passion that we want to bring out in everybody that happens to come to the site. You know, maybe it's our overwhelming enthusiasm that creates the problem to a degree.
Well, and part of it also is that when people come to sites like ATS, we work hard to diminish this, and I think we do a good job, but still generally, people involved in these discussions have an overwhelming urge to see themselves win, to see their point of view
right,
win the day,
right,
win the
exactly.
argument.
Yeah.
And I think until people realize that in this context, in this scenario, winning isn't about being right. It's about learning.
Yeah. It's not a debate. It's a matter of exchanging of ideas.
Right.
And with that, I need to exchange this idea, which is our time is through. It's over.
Yeah, baby!
And not a moment too soon. Bill, we of course appreciate you joining us, and we apologize for all the technical problems that we experienced prior, but we are glad that we were able to get you on.
I'm glad you got this worked out, because I was just...
Yeah, we are too, because this is a very special show that you're experiencing, Bill.
It's very special.
Yes.
Yeah, I can feel it. It's
X-Files, baby! X-Files!
It's, yes. Are you going to go see it?
Well, yeah, not only that, but this show we talked to Frank Spotnitz, which is right.
Yeah,
after
I heard.
Part.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah. Did it go well?
Well, it went extremely well, and you're going to hear it right after this.
Or perhaps you've already heard it.
And maybe you won't hear it again, depending on how our post production goes.
That's
with
right.
The Johninator.
Anyway, thanks, Bill.
Okay.
Yeah, Bill. Tons of thanks. All right, we'll see you soon, Bill.
Okay. Good night.
Being part of the revolution is easy. Star, flag, and dig the mother. Whether you find a great topic or really enjoy one of our podcasts, you can make it even better by taking the time to show your appreciation and applause by giving the material a star, then flag, and finally a dig. This will draw attention to the thread or podcast, and by doing so, you're making a difference and improving the ATS, BTS, and Above Politics experience. So remember, when you find a great thread or podcast, star, flag, and dig the mother. Thanks for being part of the revolution from your friends at the Above Networks, LLC.
ATS Mix Featured Interview.
Well, Dave, once again, it is so good to have you back from Saigon. I can't tell you what a technological bummer it was trying to equalize all the levels on you when you were over there just talking over the phone.
Yeah, it was really tough, especially, you know, of course, you know, even though it's 2008, there's still a lot of Saigon women of the night, you know, that were bugging me, wanting autographs, you know, because it's been, you know, 36, 37 years since I've been in Saigon. So, you know, I had that entourage thing I had to deal with, too, you know.
And that is a show all in itself, I'm sure. But let's get back to the topic. And that
I love the topic. Go with it.
I knew you would. We've got a very special guest. And as you know, Dave, and pretty much all the other listeners and members that we have here at the ATS Mix know, I am a humongous X-Files fan.
Yeah, I am too. I bleed it.
Do you?
I bleed X-Files, baby puppy.
That'll be interesting to watch. I hope you get a photograph of that someday. We were able to coerce, and I don't know if there was an abduction scenario involved in this or what, but we were able to score a major coup for the ATS Mix. And let me tell you who this guest is. His name is Frank Spotnitz. He's an award-winning writer and producer of the best-known show in the world, in my opinion, The X-Files. With Chris Carter, Spotnitz wrote and produced the forthcoming X-Files feature film, which is set for release on July the 25th, 2008. Spotnitz served on The X-Files for 8 of its 9 seasons, including 4 years as executive producer, and co-produced and co-wrote the story for the very first X-Files feature film. After the series ended, he served as executive producer alongside Michael Mann on CBS's critically acclaimed Robbery Homicide Division. In 2005, he reimagined the classic Night Stalker. Did you ever watch that show?
I loved the Night Stalker, the original, but I really loved Frank's rendition of the thing.
Yeah, we're going to have to ask him about that. Anyway, okay. the Night Stalker franchise for ABC, starring, of course, Stuart Townsend and Gabrielle Union. Most recently, his executive production crew produced Samurai Girl, a pilot for ABC Family set to debut in August 2008. Frank also has been developing a documentary on the life of Los Angeles novelist John Fante, or Fant, and we'll have to ask him if I screwed that up. He began his professional life as a reporter working for United Press International, the Associated Press, and Entertainment Weekly, among many others. Born in Japan, he received a BA in English Literature from UCLA and an MFA in Screenwriting from the American Film Institute. He has a website located at www.biglight.com, and it is a great pleasure and an honor right now to have with us Frank Spotnitz. Hi, Frank.
Hi, thank you for that great introduction.
Yeah, the Frankinator, man, we got you on. I can't believe it. You know, I got to tell you, Frank, you know, I mean, of course, Johnny's already said it, but, you know, he and I are both just bleed X-Files and have since its inception. But, you know, we just put up the question thing on the AboveTopSecret.com just a few days ago. And, I mean, there's 6,500 people that have viewed, over 78, approaching 80 people that have replied. And, of course, keep in mind that we try to encourage them, if the question has already been asked, not to ask the same question. So you've got about 78 individual questions. It's one of the most popular
and fastest growing
record-making
thread.
Yeah, that has started. So congrats on that. Obviously, your reputation precedes you, Frank.
Well, I have to tell you, Chris Carter and I started work on this script last year, and we had no idea whether anybody was out there waiting for this. And honestly, we had no idea even as we started production on the film last December. But since February, when we all appeared at the WonderCon convention in San Francisco, it's just been a wave of excitement and affection for the show, and it's been really, really gratifying.
I mean, well, it's got to be heartwarming for you to realize that something that you guys created way back when, I mean, still has just this huge following.
It is. I mean, honestly, it's very, very moving, and we're very appreciative because that was our hope all along when we were doing the show, was that it would last. We never wanted to just make something that people would watch on Friday night or later Sunday night and then, you know, never pay attention to again. We were aiming to create something that would stand the test of time. And, you know, it's only been 6 years, but so far so good.
Well, what you originally said just a minute or so ago that you and Chris Carter didn't really know if there were anybody out there that was even still had an interest in it. Well, I tell you this, my friend. When it comes out there in the out there department, Dave and I are right in the front row.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, our elevators don't always hit the top floor, if you know what I mean.
But
that's okay. That's what gives us an open mind, you know?
And we really enjoy that ambient music that we listen to on the elevator all the time. You know, I guess, like Dave said, we had an overload of members chime in. In fact, we have a new little thing here at AboveTopSecret.com that allows even people that are not members to anonymously post a question in this special thing. So, and we had an overwhelming number of people that did that. But I want to ask this question. only because I work for a conspiracy site, it has to be asked. When you were doing research for a script, whether it's a movie or an episode of a show, do you ever peruse sites like AboveTopSecret.com for your information and research?
I do now. I didn't when the X-Files was on television. It's hard to believe it, but you know, in the early days, there was no such thing really. The internet was such a baby medium then that I actually would go to the library and find books. That was how I did my research. And it really wasn't until the last, you know, 2 or 3 years of the show that you could go to websites and start to do research. And you know, now if we were doing the TV series, it's incredible to think, you know, how much we could get by going online. But I do now when I'm working on movies or television shows, I'll frequently go to all kinds of websites. Although I have to say, I tend to go to the types of websites you wouldn't think would be associated with this subject matter, because I'm trying to find things really far afield, and I'll draw inspiration from things really that you would never imagine, like, you know, the autobiography of a restaurant critic, or, you know, just the strangest places, and try and turn those everyday situations into something scary and supernatural.
Wow. Well, you know, like I said, we had just and I'm going to use a technical Hollywood term, we had a buttload of people ask you questions. And so we want to get right to them. And I mean, obviously, we're gonna cover the gamut of everything you've been involved in. But before I start, you were born in Japan. So how long did you live in Japan, Frank?
4 years. My father was a doctor in the Army Medical Corps, and so I was born on the Camp Zama Army Base in Japan. And he got transferred back to the States to Aurora, Colorado. So I have not actually been back to Japan since 1964, and I hope to be going back this fall to promote the X-Files. It will be very exciting for me to go see where I was born.
Well, you know what will be really neat is that the Japanese people are huge fans of science fiction and alternative subjects and stuff.
Yeah, I know X-Files has a huge following there, so that'll be fun too.
I want to just interject something here real quick before we start getting to all the questions. We mentioned in the bio that you are working on developing a documentary on the life of a Los Angeles novelist, John. Could you tell me, did I even come close in pronouncing the last name correctly?
Well, you know, different people pronounce the name different ways, but the way that the family pronounces it is Fonte.
Okay.
Even though he's of Italian origin. Fonte sounds like a French pronunciation, but yeah, he's a wonderful writer. If you ever get a chance to read his books, they're very, very funny, and most of them are written in the 1930s, but they're still very contemporary and read like they were written today.
Well, what was it about John that garnered your interest into wanting to develop a documentary on his life?
You know, it's a great, tragic American story about a guy who dreamed of being a great American writer, and instead of going to New York like most people of his generation did, he came to Los Angeles, and he writes about the city in the 30s with a beauty and a clarity that is really unparalleled. And his books were wonderful, but they faded from view very quickly, and he turned to Hollywood, where he really wasted most of his talent. And it's a very dramatic story, and it's an immigrant story as well, because he was Italian American and Catholic, but very, very funny, tragic and funny at the same time. And I got to know not John, because he'd passed away by the time I discovered his work, but I got to know his wife, who is now deceased, and many members of his family very well. And it's something I hope to finish if I ever find the time. Honestly, X-Files has kept me from getting around to it. Not that I'm complaining, but
yeah, darn those X-Files. Darn those X-Files.
That's right, exactly.
Well, all right, before we get into member questions, I got to ask this, because I've been around a few producers like yourselves, I have to ask this. You know, was there any kind of real big problems when you were trying to do this last feature and trying to get the original cast, David and Jillian, back in to the fold, or did they just jump right in with it?
There were plenty of problems, but none really with getting David and Jillian. Honestly, all of us I think, always wanted to do this. And I think the truth is we thought we'd do 5 years of the TV show, and then with any luck, we could do a movie series. Well, as you know, it didn't work out that way at all. We did a movie after the fifth season and then did 4 more years of the show, and then this took forever to get off the ground. Deal-making was part of the delay, but most of it was a legal dispute between Chris Carter and the studio, and that just stopped the whole project dead in its tracks for 4 years. Once Chris and the studio settled their dispute last January 2007, the movie got going pretty quickly.
So this thing's been going on for quite some time. It's just been bogged down in all the politics and stuff, right?
Yes. And, you know, it was very frustrating to me and David and Julian, too, I think. But I have to say, you know, sometimes there's silver linings to these things. And I think the movie ended up being a lot more interesting because of the long gap between, you know, when we last saw Mulder and Scully. And Chris and I, you know, got a few years older and see life a little differently now. And I think we found when we returned to the characters that we had an awful lot to say that we'd never said before. So it was very exciting to return.
I experience that on a daily basis with my co-host. I find out that he has a lot more to say than I originally thought. As I comedically sidebar here. We've got a ton and a half of member questions here, and we should probably get into them, or we're not going to be able to cover all of them. And I want you to know just right off the get-go here, Frank, that they jump around all over the place. So, you know, be advised. You have been warned. No disclaimer necessary. One of the members is by the name of White Raven, and he wanted to know, or she, we don't know, are the two main characters of the X-Files based on any real FBI people?
No, they're not. Although the name Mulder is a family name for Chris Carter, and Scully is named after Vin Scully, the great Dodgers announcer. But they are completely fictitious characters.
All right, Jay Hill 76. Now, I know the answer to this, but what's fun, Frank, is we get to ask you and get to play like we don't really know, even though we're X-File
fanatics.
I was going to say X-File Fidophiles, but that may sound weird. Okay, anyway, I am wondering why the main character, Fox Mulder, left or got fired from the X-Files, you know, and then he came back and did that thing. He wants to know, did he get, you know, fired? He did get tired of it? What?
I think he got tired of it, I have to say. It was incredibly hard work. I think people don't necessarily realize how hard it is to do a show like this, but you know, the actors typically start Monday morning at around 5 or 6 in the morning and work 14-hour days, and your start time staggers every day, so you're starting at 5 or 6 on Monday, but by Friday you're probably starting at, you know, 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, which means you're finishing at 5 or 6 a.m. on Saturday. And then obviously you're sleeping all day Saturday, you have one day of rest, and you do it again 10 months out of the year.
Right.
So after doing that for 7 years, I think David was just tired, and he didn't want to stop, though. He just wanted to take a break and not have such a punishing schedule.
Right.
So he continued to appear in the show, but in a greatly reduced presence. And as you can imagine, that was a real challenge for us as writers, because the show was really built around Mulder and his character. So,
sure, exactly.
You know, we're very proud of the work we did the last 2 years, but I certainly understand why a lot of people didn't have the affection for those seasons as they did the years when David was there full time.
Right.
A member by the name of Chiru, and I hope I pronounced that name correctly, wanted to know if there were any weird incidences that ever happened on the set.
Yeah, you know, there were. Unfortunately, I can't think of as many examples as David or Jillian might, because I would always be writing and visited the set, really. Didn't work on the set very often. But I do remember one time in Vancouver, we had our catering truck parked in the parking lot, and we moved it, and less than 15 minutes later, a huge tree came crashing down exactly where the catering truck had been.
Oh, wow.
And if they hadn't moved it just then, you know, people would have died. That's how violent the crash was. But there are other reports of people feeling ghosts. often filmed at a hospital that is shut down or largely shut down called Riverview. It's a mental hospital where we also filmed much of the new movie. And there are a lot of people who claim to have felt the presence of ghosts there.
Okay, Alien 1018. Were any of the X-Files ever suggested from real case files that you were researching?
We were frequently inspired by real stories or crimes, but never FBI case files, to my knowledge. But we were always looking for things in the newspapers or out of history. They were greatly fictionalized, obviously. But that's what I was sort of alluding to earlier. We tend to take things that had nothing to do with the supernatural or with conspiracy thinking and then weave them into our conspiracies. And that was usually the richest source of material for us.
A member by the name of Baudrill wants to know, how were you able to span the show over the years, ensuring that the storyline would keep people on their toes?
Wow, that's a real balancing act, and you just have to feel your way forward, you know, emotionally. Chris had an endpoint in mind for the series, and then each year we'd sort of, you know, figure out how much of that road we could travel, and then pick up found objects, as it were, in the storytelling. And we'd always answer one question and then ask a bunch more. But I have to say, maybe because I started at the beginning of the second season, not at the very beginning of the show, I was always a writer and a fan, and so I was always trying to think of what I would want to see in the show if I were a fan. And I loved it. You know, I loved what I was doing. It was exactly the kind of show I would have watched as a kid. So it was not hard for me, and still isn't hard for me, to feel that deep emotional connection to the storytelling.
Well, while we're talking about that, I'm going to do a minor sidebar, John.
Okay.
You started in the second season, so, I mean, how great was that, Frank, that, you know, something that goes on to actually create the history that it has, you get sucked into it. How did you get involved in the second season of the thing? I assume they had a writer before.
Yeah, it was completely dumb luck. I thought I was going to write movies, and a friend of mine wanted to pitch to the X-Files, and he knew that I knew Chris Carter. Not well, actually. I hadn't spoken to him in some time, in a couple of years, but I'd met him through a book group years earlier. So I called him on behalf of my friend to see if he would hear this guy's pitches for story ideas. And Chris ended up not hearing my friend's pitches, but suggesting that I come in and pitch ideas, which I'd never thought of doing. And I pitched some ideas. He didn't buy them. And then, much to my surprise, he called me a few weeks later and asked me to join the staff. And it was my first job in Hollywood. So talk about a good first job.
Man.
But I have to say, it had an air of unreality about it. I never felt real, the success of the show. And we were working so hard every day to make it as good as we could. And, you know, once a year, maybe, you'd take a night off and go to an award show, and you'd get a sense that this was something that, you know, was really successful. But most of the time, we just were focused on, you know, all the thousand crises you face every day producing a television show.
We have a couple of questions here that are dealing with the series The Lone Gunman, and the member Beefeater wanted to know if you could explain the thoughts and ideas that ended up being the pilot Lone Gunman plot that seems to frighteningly resemble the real events of 9/11.
Yeah, I've been asked about that a lot, and all I can tell you is, you know, I was in a room with my colleagues, John Shiven and Vince Gilligan, and we were trying to think of a really horrible crime, and we thought, you know, use an airliner as a weapon, and what better target than the World Trade Center? And that became the storyline that we shot, and that was on television in March 2001. Of course, in our storyline, the lone gunman keep the airliner from colliding with the Twin Towers, and I'll never forget, of course, like anybody else, I won't forget the morning of 9/11. I was actually directing an episode of The X-Files, and I woke up and saw the Twin Towers on fire. And the first thought that came to my mind was the lone gunman, and I was just mortified that, you know, maybe we had somehow inspired this crime, and greatly relieved. And it sounds strange to say, but greatly relieved to find out that, in fact, you know, it had nothing to do with it. It was just an eerie coincidence that used the same methodology, But, you know, I have to say, it was very tough to listen to commentators in the weeks and months after 9/11 saying this was unimaginable, nobody could have foreseen this. when it had been on national television 6 months earlier.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of raises some questions right there, I think. People just haven't been very observant, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this guy, the only reason I'm going to ask this guy's, ask you this guy's question is because I love this guy's name. He's called Flying Flying Woody.
And amazing that you would be compelled to like that name.
Sorry. There seems to be only a minimal amount of advertising, Frank, for the new X-Files movie. What was the reasoning for not having a bigger promotional budget, I guess, to promote this new movie?
Oh, I think as the movie's release grows closer, especially the final week of the movie, you're going to see it everywhere. I think it doesn't make a lot of sense to raise awareness really early when you're in a crowded summer marketplace, and we've got some really huge competition, especially, you know, the Batman movie, The Dark Knight, which opens the week before us, which, you know, I'm excited to see. So I think after Batman opens, hopefully, people are going to start to see X-Files everywhere, and everyone will know about it by July 25th.
That sounds great. A member by the name of Wings wanted to know if there was ever an episode that either prior or after its airing that someone from perhaps one of the three-letter alphabet agencies might have come forward and asked questions about it, or, for example, might have said, hey, where did you get that information from?
No, not in a hostile way. I have to say, I think there was some wariness from the official FBI. We always had a lot of support from the rank and file, you know, people who worked at the FBI. But there's some wariness about the X-Files in the early years because they weren't sure whether the FBI was being cast in a positive light. But as time went on, you know, even those people threw in their towels, and we, you know, even official FBI became fans of the show. So I've met many people in different government agencies now over the years, and they just they enjoy the show like anybody else as fans. But no, there's nothing we ever dramatized that touched a nerve, or at least that they admitted touched a nerve.
Okay, member Excitable Boy says, my favorite episode, Frank, is the one with Jack Black and Giovanni Ribisi. Were you ever involved in the casting on any of the shows?
Yes, and I'm a big Warren Zevon fan, too, for Excitable Boy there. But, yeah, I was there when Giovanni came in and won the part, and Jack Black, too. You know, they were just unknown actors coming in trying to get a guest spot. And that happened with many other, you know, amazing actors that we had on the show over the years. So that's one of the fun things now, is to go back and look at the show and see the famous faces that appeared as unknowns.
Yeah, don't you find it amazing that those two guys really went on to really just stake their own claim in the acting community?
Yeah, and, you know, they're great in that episode. It's called DPO. It's at the beginning of season three, and they're sort of slacker loser buddies in the episode, and well cast, I have to say.
I'm not touching that one, Frank.
We have another member by the name of DJ Vex, and this seems to be more of a personal question asked just straight to you, Frank, which is, what is your take, Frank, on the recent global flap of UFOs, as well as perhaps your opinion on any type of disclosure?
Well, honestly, I haven't followed it that closely, except that I know that the British released their so-called X-Files to the public, but I haven't studied what was released, but I hope to. I've just been so busy working on the movie that I really haven't had time to do anything outside of the movie, and probably won't until next month after it's been out there, but there is a lot that's come into the public view in the last 6 months, and you know, my hope is that there'll be more X-Files movies, and that I'll have a reason to incorporate that research into future storytelling.
Okay, member William Onesack, his question is there any truth to the rumor, Frank, that the theme of the X-Files has Mulder being led by our agents high up in the U.S. government?
I can't, you know, we've been trying so hard to keep the plot of the movie a secret, and I don't want to fumble the ball here as we cross the finish line. But
yeah, we don't want you to do that.
We're close. We're close. And I don't think people really want to know anyway. People, most of the fans I talk to are excited to be surprised.
Yeah, I want to be surprised, too.
I want to be surprised. Member Dan Tana says, hey, Frank, where do the inspirations for such a long but amazing series of shows come from?
You know, that's always the hardest question to answer, and they come from all over the place. The best answer I can give is that when I'm stuck, when I have been stuck in the past, I'll think back on my childhood and think about things that scared me as a kid, and that inevitably will lead to a story idea, because those are the things that make the scariest episodes, are the things that all of us fear, you know, from childhood, that are just sort of primal to all of us. And that was the thing, you know, that I think you could sort of say is common to virtually all X-Files episodes, is that they play on fears that all of us have, and the more believable they seem, the more resonant they were with a lot of people.
All right, Maria Stardust says, were you a conspiracy buff or had any interest in conspiracies before you started working on the X-Files series?
I was not a conspiracy buff, and I knew very little about UFOs. I've since come to know a lot more about both subjects. And, you know, I'm always skeptical of conspiracies because I don't know how confident people are at keeping secrets like that. But I think what's interesting to me about conspiracies as storytelling devices is that they provide answers to a very complicated world, and I find that very satisfying. I also think, you know, one of the secrets of the X-Files conspiracies were that there were always a lot of shades of gray, you know, among the conspirators,
right,
among the bad guys. Especially you look at the scenes with the Syndicate, you know, the guys running the alien-human conspiracy in our show, and they had debates among themselves, and some of their motives were actually, you know, somewhat understandable or sympathetic motives, including Mulder's own father. So that's what I find fascinating about them as subject matter.
A couple of more lone gunman questions. This one is from Trauma. Frank, I would really like to know whose idea it was for the pilot episode of The Lone Gunman, and who wrote the script?
Well, the idea was something that Vince and John and I came up with, and then we wrote the script with Chris Carter. And I have to say, The Lone Gunman was just a joy for me from beginning to end. I loved the show, loved doing all 13 episodes, and that was probably the single biggest heartbreak I've had in Hollywood when Fox didn't renew it, because we really felt we had something special. And I think commercially speaking, our problem was that we got to it too late. You know, The X-Files was already in season 7, so it sort of had, the series had peaked in popularity, and it was a little late to be riding its coattails to launch a spinoff. But that's another thing where there's so much love for those characters in that show, more than I ever knew when it was on the air, and that's also been very gratifying.
Okay, another one keeping in that same genre, the Utopian Penguin. Being that The Lone Gunman has become somewhat of a cult classic now, has there been any interest to revive the series?
You know, I would revive it in a heartbeat. I just think it's finding someone willing to do that. You know, the characters allegedly died, but nobody's ever really dead in the X-Files. I would love a way to revisit them. I just don't know how it's going to happen.
Member Danks asked this. In an interview, Dean Haglin from the series The Lone Gunman tells a story that he met a professional psychic, and she told him that she had met Chris Carter at a Hollywood party before The X-Files was picked up by Fox. Dean asked the psychic what she was doing at the Hollywood party, and she said, well, that's the weird thing. I only get emails telling me to go to this or that party. Dean then asked her, well, who sent you the email? And she says, I think it was the CIA. My question to you, Frank, is, have you ever heard this story, and is there possibly any truth to this?
I've never heard the story, and let's just say it sounds suspicious.
Oh, I love that.
We're talking about the X-Files and the Lone Gunman, and it sounds
it
suspicious.
It sounds suspicious. Yes. I love that. Yeah, we need to trademark that, Frank. Okay, member Morbid Tracy Will this movie follow the timeline of it, or does the new movie have an independent timeline?
This movie takes place essentially in real time. It's basically 6 years since we last saw Mulder and Scully. It's 6 years have gone by in their lives. The only slight adjustment to that calendar is the movie takes place in the dead of winter and it's being released in July. So let's say it's January 2008 rather than July 2008.
Right.
Well, it'll keep everybody cool in the theaters.
That's right, exactly.
Another member by the name of, I'm going to have trouble with this one, Dave.
Marduk Ra.
Thank you. Marduk Ra wants to know, what research did it take to develop the characters of the Smoking Man and his group of elitists? Was this possibly modeled after any individuals living or dead?
No, it wasn't. The Smoking Man was really an extra in the pilot of the show, and he was one of those great discoveries that, you know, the writers wrote dialogue for him later in season one, and he turned out to be a fantastic actor, and the more we gave him to do, the better he got. And then we expanded, you know, the group around him to create the syndicate and the Well-Manicured Man, played by John Neville. And I'd say if there was any model lines, it was war criminals or, you know, Vichy collaborationists from France in World War II. But that's sort of more archetypes than specific characters we were thinking of.
Okay, and this kind of goes along with some with one you've already answered, but it's phrased a little bit differently, and maybe you can be a little bit more elaboration on this. The Master One wants to know, and I'm gonna paraphrase and put my own little spin on his question. But you know, let's say we have a home run on the new release coming out the 25th, Frank. What would be the future of the X-Files? Would, if it was a home run, would you guys consider doing another TV series or another movie or what?
I think a TV series is extremely unlikely, but I think all of us would love to do more of these movies, and it will depend on how this one does this summer. But if it's successful, you know, I'd love to keep doing them. You know, every couple of years, another X-Files movie. I think I've always thought it's an idea that could go on forever, and you know, we love doing it. So I hope we get the opportunity.
And the Star Trek franchise has proven that it's a home run concept doing the movies.
It had a very long life, and now is being reinvented once more. I think. The nice thing about the X-Files is that it's about the limits of what we understand, and that's really an endless source of storytelling.
Member by the name of Ka Orat wants to know, which episode, Frank, stands out for you as being the most memorable and your favorite?
Boy, it's always a tough question for me to answer because there's so many favorites I have, and the X-Files was really so many different shows in one. It was, you know, it was a supernatural thriller, it was a murder mystery, it was horror, it was comedy. I have a bunch of favorites. I love all the Darren Morgan episodes, Humbug, Clyde Bruckman, Jose Chung, Chris Carter's, Dwayne Barry, Triangle, the postmodern Prometheus. I think Home, written by Glenn Morgan and Jim Wong, is the single scariest episode we ever did.
Yes.
the alien episodes, you know, Memento Mori, which was the one where Scully found out she had cancer, is my personal favorite.
Right, me too.
I love many of the episodes Vince Gilligan wrote, like Bad Blood. So I got a long list, I'm afraid.
All right. I'm going to try this. Wagnerian21. His question, Frank, is whether we'll ever see a standalone Millennium film or at least some closure on the Frank Black story.
You know, that's something that Chris Carter has talked about wanting to do for many years. And again, it's one of those things where the studio would have to have the will to make it. But I think if the studio did, that Chris and Lance Henriksen would be up for the challenge.
I am going to skip that next question there, Dave, and move right down to the some of the anonymous ATS member questions. Anonymous ATS member wanted to know, just wondering what pranks or practical jokes were played on the X-Files. I want to believe movie set, and who played them?
Well, there were some. There was some disinformation I'm willing to reveal, because we wanted to protect the secrecy of the plot. And so we realized fairly early on the only way to do that was to put out so much disinformation that people wouldn't know what to believe and what not to believe on the internet. So there's some fake rumors out there, and once the movie opens, I'll be happy to reveal which ones we planted and which ones we didn't.
All right. Another anonymous ATS member says, there has been talk that there are hidden messages in the ending credits. Any truth to this?
There are no hidden messages in the ending credits that I'm aware of. We did the last season of the show grab a lot of fans' names off the internet and put them in the opening credits. But that's the only hidden clues that we intentionally put in the show anyway.
Oh, well, that's kind of interesting.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. A member by the name of NGC2736 says, in view of all the MSM interest in UFOs lately, could a spinoff show, sans the FBI angle, be anticipated? Perhaps a UFO investigator's caught up in the push for government disclosure. Have you ever thought about something like this, Frank?
Yeah, and it's possible. You know, anything is possible. It's not something we've actively tried to develop, but you know, never say never.
Dave?
Sorry. I was in the Twilight Zone. I was so entranced with what Frank was saying.
Yes.
Tudor, did you ever collaborate with the original Night Stalker writers prior to the writing of the new version that you created?
You know, I actually was in touch through a third party with Jeff Rice, who wrote the original novel on which the Night Stalker was based, and Dan Curtis, who produced and directed some of the Night Stalker, but he produced the original Night Stalker, was a consultant on the pilot and the series. And it was a controversial version because it was radically different from the Darren McGavin version. And I love Darren McGavin, and I actually got to know him because we wrote parts for him in the X-Files. But I was convinced that if I tried to do Darren McGavin again, it would just be like a pale imitation of him because he's just so great and unique. And we took a lot of hits for changing it as much as we did, but I was convinced that in time people would see the integrity of what we were doing, and unfortunately we just didn't get the time. But I'm very proud of the work we did do, and I think people who love the X-Files, if they were to check it out on DVD, they'd love Night Stalker too.
Well, so all right. Yeah, go ahead, John.
I was just going to sidebar here. Since we're talking about the Night Stalker, I'm just kind of curious, what was it that garnered your attention that made you want to lean towards reimagining this storyline?
Well, it was something that the network came to me to do, and I was such a fan of it, and I saw an opportunity to do something new with it and to tell stories about good and evil and the nature of good and evil. And that's really what the theme of it was. It wasn't so much aliens. It was about the evil around us every day and how hard it is to recognize evil when we see it. And that was the conceit in the new Night Stalker, was that Carl Kolchak had the mark of evil on his wrist. And we were going to find out that, in fact, he was born evil. And the question of the show was whether he could overcome that or not. And If you watch the episodes, you see that the final two-part episode is a very intriguing look at that question.
Aren't you doing some comic book things?
Yes, we've relaunched the X-Files as a comic book series through DC Wildstorm, and I've written one issue that's coming out actually the same day as the movie, on July 25th, and am working right now on two more, a two-part comic book story.
Well, is it going to be? I assume it's going to be along the same concept of what you guys have developed over the years, right?
It is. It's sort of timeless. It's set in sort of the, I guess I'd call it the classic period of the X-Files TV series, somewhere between seasons 2 and season 5. So it's Mulder and Scully at the FBI, and a lot of the characters that we love from that period are back. You know, not only the Lone Gunman and Skinner, but right. Cigarette Smoking Man and X, and it's been really fun to revisit that world.
You just recently have executive produced a pilot for ABC Family that's set to, I guess, debut in August 2008 called Samurai Girl. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that and what it was that drew your attention towards that?
Well, that was something I was asked to help produce. A wonderful script had already been written by a young writer named Luke McMullen, and I came in with my friend Brian Spicer and from Lone Gunman and X-Files days, who directed it, and Joel Ransom, who's a fantastic director of photography from X-Files and another show we did with Chris called Harsh Realm. And we just had a ball doing it. It has a lot of martial arts in it, and we found a young lady named Jamie Chung, who's the title character, who I think is going to be a really a big star. She's a very talented young actress. So it was just a lot of fun to do. And I'm not doing the series, but I have high hopes for it.
Well, before we let you go, Frank, and again, we really appreciate you pulling over to the side of the road and not getting a $100 ticket out in California to talk to us. But we both, Johnny and I, want to tell everybody about the websites again. There's a couple of places, and we're going to post all these on the thread. But there's a couple of places we want to direct everybody's attention to. First is the Big Light Productions webpage at www.biglight.com. And there's some neat things on that particular site, especially if you go into the social network, the Big Light social network, which I thought was really kind of neat the way you guys have designed that. And then another, obviously we want to direct everybody's attention to the X-Files website itself, which is www.xfiles.com. Now, the thing I really love about the X-Files website, Frank, is when you first get to the site, you get the preview of the movie, I Want to Believe, which was kind of cool. And then, of course, you get into it. There's all kinds of things, downloads and widgets and blogs and trailers and videos about the film. And while we're on this particular thing and before we let you go, did they incorporate you guys, Chris and you, when they were designing this? Obviously, you guys had some kind of input on how you wanted it to look for the new movie, right?
Yeah, they asked us, and they showed us the designs at every step of the way. I have to say the people at Fox are very good at what they do, and that's another nice thing too, is that a lot of them are fans of the show as well. So there's been a lot of love directed at the way this title has been promoted, you know, in every department, including the website.
Well, we're going to encourage all our listeners, fans, and members alike to go venture to those websites that Dave mentioned, and as he said, we'll have links for those. Frank, we can't tell you how much we appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to talk with us and answer our member questions.
It's been my pleasure. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Frank, we really appreciate it, brother. Great job, and please give our best to Mulder and Scully, will you?
Thanks, and I'll be checking out your website.
All right,
brother. All right,
we'll
thanks, Frank.
All right, man.
Thank you.
Well, John, I tell you, that was talk about some guy that really had a lot of patience to answer questions, and I really thought he did a marvelous job. So kudos to Frank. And again, we want to remind everybody that the movie comes out July 25th, nationwide opening, and it's called X-Files, I Want to Believe.
Well, Dave, what an episode, eh?
Yeah. What are you, Canadian? Yeah,
yes, I am.
Was, as a matter of fact,
hey,
it was a marvelous show, John. I mean, not only did we have a Skeptic Overlord unleashed, and he's always hilarious. You know, we had Ruben help us with our intro, and then of course, you know, my holy grail, Frank Spotnitz of the X Files. Boy, what a show it was!
And if you enjoyed this show, please dig, star, and tell somebody about it. And if you won't tell anybody, I got a secret to tell you.
Oh, wow. What is it, John?
Next episode, we have Colm Kelleher's partner from The Hunt for the Skinwalker in an interview, George Knapp.
The Georgianator's coming?
The Georgianator.
Wow!
And boy, that's going to be a roller coaster ride, trust me.
It is going to be a roller coaster ride. I am really stoked for that one, John.
All right, well, but you got to wait till next week.
Okay, very good.
All right.
Well, until next time, hope you everybody enjoyed this X-Files version of the ATS Mix. So, until you see us again, I will be Fox Mulder.
And I guess I'm Scully.
Anyway, we'll see everybody next time on the ATS Mix.
ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com is over.
You've been listening to the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. If you have a comment, suggestion, an opposing view, or would like to participate in a future show of ATS Mix, please contact Dave or Johnny at www.abovetopsecret.com. The views expressed on ATS Mix do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of the Above Network, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening. You may now reattach your tinfoil hat. We'll be right back.